Are we on?
Yeah.
All right. I'd like to call the special meeting of October 30th of the CEPA Board of Directors to order. Sharon, would you please call the roll?
Amelon?
Here.
Donato?
Here.
Severson?
Present.
Davies?
Here.
Kous?
Here.
Skilling?
Here.
Lynn?
Here.
Larson?
Here.
Priceanka?
Here.
Von Bargen?
Here.
Thank you.
So we have an agenda before us. Item 2 is approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing and seeing none, please call the roll.
Amelon?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Kous?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Priceanka?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That brings us to item 3, new business. Item A, ratification of a 2-year lease with Ketchikan Gateway Borough. There is a motion on, I think, page 2?
Page 3.
Page 3?
PDF, page 3.
Okay.
2.
2.
PDF.
Chair, I move to approve amendment number 2 to the lease agreement entered on or about September 3rd, 2019 between CEPA and the Ketchikan Gateway Borough, KGB, for the lease of CEPA's offices in the KGB building, and to ratify and authorize the execution of the lease agreement that includes a 2-year term from January 16, 2020 through January 15, 2022.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Trey, you want to elaborate?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This is just a little administrative cleanup here. We actually were able to negotiate a 2-year extension rather than a 5-year extension that, to give us more flexibility in the event that we do build out an office building and would lock us into a longer term lease. So essentially it escalated at the same rate it has been over each year over year. So pretty straightforward.
Thank you. So this is also the term of lease is in consideration to the proposal to build our own facility at some point and not get tied into something where we're leasing this. And
Yes, sir.
Any questions?
Just a quick question.
Bob.
Please
identify yourself in case.
Yes, Bob Lynn, Petersburg. If for some reason we don't get our facility built and so forth, then that in that lease agreement you renegotiate, is it option then to continue this?
There's an option to renegotiate an extension.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Please call the roll.
Priceanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Kous?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Thank you.
That brings us to item B, consideration and approval of RR19334 heat pumps for the Wrangell office and RR19335 Swan Lake Unit 2 stuffing box replacement. There's a motion under the next tab.
Mr. Chair, I move to increase the R&R budget by $7,500 for RR19334 heat pump Wrangell and by $108,900 for RR19335 Swan Lake Unit 2 stuffing box replacement and further move to approve the addition of both projects. The combined projects will increase the current R&R budget by $116,400, bringing the total current R&R budget to $564,050.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Trey?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So two R&Rs are before you today. The heat pump, I think it's just a prudent thing to do. We're spending a lot of money on oil in Wrangell facility, and it's been kind of a thorn in our side for many years, and I think the reason I'm bringing it forward to now, it'd be nice to get it installed before the weather changes and get the maximum value this first year out of it. So not a lot of money that'll actually go into an existing asset, which will allow us to capitalize that expenditure. So that's $7,500. That's item one. Any questions on that particular one?
The only question is, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
The only question that I have, Trey, is this is we're making changes to the R&R budget overall, where we're standing in lieu of decreased sales, and the organization as a whole. Typically, I've been fairly, you know, we're doing so well that we're giving money back, and so if we were investing in equipment, you know, overall, I wasn't worried about it. Now, I don't know whether I need to be worried or not.
The payback on the heat pumps? Pretty quick.
Sorry. Oh, the payback. Yes, okay. Yeah. I appreciate that. Okay, so just in a larger discussion then, as we're looking at, I know this is only $7,500, but we're looking at the next one's $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Is there concerns about bumping up? Are we concerned at all about the budget given the current state?
So currently our budget is quite a bit less than the reserves that we hold in the R&R fund. So we're not bumping up against that yet.
We're not bumping up against that. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And just to correct too, I made the comment about oil, but also it's primarily electric heat in that particular facility. So we would obviously be using a little bit different mechanism to generate that heat. There's a waste oil burner there, but we try not to use it. It's kind of dirty. So wanted to make that clarification.
All right.
Are
we going to vote on these individually or collectively? I think they're set up to be collectively. Is that correct?
Yep.
All right. All right. So let's move on to the, if there's no other questions in regards to the heat pump.
Okay. Stuffing box. So this item, we just got through doing this on unit one. And this is a very important piece of work to correct some shortcomings on this. And the reason why we're bringing this before the board now is so we have enough time to order the parts to get them to effect a repair when we have a window of opportunity, which may occur later in the winter. So that's why this is before you today. But it is definitely work that needs to be done, and the sooner we can get the parts on order, the better.
So Trey, this is just a repeat of, I think at the last board meeting you gave a presentation in regards to the changing the stuffing box and the wicket gate stuff. And
same, just different unit.
Okay.
Ed, do you want to comment anything additional on that?
That's exactly what this is. It's just moving to the next unit, doing the same work.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Andy.
Yeah. So my question, we call it a stuffing box, and so just in my vocabulary, when I hear stuffing box, I think of packing, but it's actually a mechanical seal. So we're just calling it a stuffing box, but it's actually the mechanical seal that we want to rebuild or replace.
That's the manufacturer's preference. They call it a stuffing box. You're absolutely right. It's a mechanical seal.
All right.
And then because of what we found in the original one, the wicket gate arms and stuff being all corroded and froze up.
You got to tear all that down to get to this.
So you might as well do it at the time you're there.
You have to.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it's also, some folks refer to it as a distributor assembly. So.
Okay.
There's
okay.
Some different terminology depending on who you're talking to.
All right. Any questions? Yes, Andy.
Roughly how long does it take to rebuild all of this? You got some idea? Is it like a week, 2 weeks?
I'll let Ed answer that. We just got through doing it.
10 days.
10 days?
Is what we
were. 10-day outage, and you tear it all apart and open all the parts and put it all back?
Yeah, a unit outage, not plant.
A one unit outage?
Yeah.
Right, so you could do it with the other unit running?
Absolutely.
Okay. Isolate them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Hearing and seeing none, would you please call the roll?
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysunka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Sievertson?
Yes.
Coos?
Yes.
Thank you.
Brings us to item C, update discussion for SEPA insurance renewals. I see we do have an opportunity for a call-in.
We do. Should have Gary Griffin on the line that is our insurance consultant.
I am online.
Thanks, Gary. I'll just kind of set the table, if you will.
Sure.
Give you the board a brief explanation on why I've asked Gary to be on the line. First of all, we are in the process of our insurance renewals. It's taken a lot of extra time this year to get through our renewals. Just lots of effort to look at our coverages and to negotiate different elements. We're coming up very close to within a day or two of having to have those bound. So one item that we spent a bunch of time looking at is the D&O coverage. That was directors and officers. And that was a topic that came up at the last board meeting. There was some preliminary discussion on whether our levels were appropriate, too much, or we're spending too much money on that particular area. So we did a really deep dive into that, and it took quite a bit to get to the bottom of it. And I'll let Gary speak to that particular issue. And then we're in the process of just finalizing some of the costs. Our insurance process of approval is a little bit different than how we do other things. And so we provided a general overview when we started this process that actually explained the whole process on how we get to the end. And this will be kind of hopefully a wrap up on where those coverages ended up. Some of them have some, I'll say, fairly significant increases to be expected due to some of the market conditions that are currently going on. So with that, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'd like to let Gary Griffin go ahead and provide the update to the board.
That would be fine, and please define what the D&O liability, what the D&O stands for.
Director and officer liability.
Okay, director and officer. Go ahead.
Essentially, would you like to start with the D&O first or the general insurance?
So Gary, before the board has a copy of this handout that we stuck in this
okay.
In the hard copy, and obviously the first couple pages is pretty wordy, and they really haven't had a chance to review it since we just got it done yesterday. Just hit on the high points of those different sections, and I think kind of the real meat of it is probably going to be the last table on page 3. So maybe just kind of walk them through that, give them the highlights and any particular updates, and then maybe kind of wrap up with where we ended up for the insurance for the year.
Absolutely. So on the D&O coverage, we first started buying that for the Fortin pool back at the divestiture from the state. And at the time, it was pretty heavily examined by the attorneys that Fortin Pool had at the time. I think it was Adder Wynn. I was involved in the insurance brokers and the committee, the formation committee. And we secured quotes at different levels, and it was determined amongst that group of people that the appropriate limit at the time would be $10 million. So that limit kind of continued through the years, and it was like re-examined again right around the time that the intertie construction was ready to start. We actually made a number of changes to the insurance program, especially related to liability insurance for the increased exposure from the construction project. But it was determined just to keep the D&O limit at $10 million as well. And we also re-examined it when we were coming up on the restructuring. And I believe we had a number of meetings with the attorneys at the time, Dave Carlson, and our focus was really in making sure we had continuity of coverage as the kind of the entity changed. And we didn't do anything with the limit at that time either. And then the next time it was looked at was in 2011. A new kind of coverage was kind of entering the marketplace. It was called Side A coverage, and it was kind of it was a separate product that was designed to benefit just the individual directors and officers to provide them with some additional, sleep insurance. So the broker at the time, he provided us some additional information and gave us some quotes, and the board at the time decided to purchase $2.5 million in extra coverage. And again, this is something that's just for the benefit of the directors and officers. And that insurance has kind of continued you know, it's kind of continued to today. So you have two elements of coverage. You have the primary director and officer liability, which is currently at $10 million. And that essentially is in place to fund the indemnification obligations of SEPA to its directors and officers. And then kind of on top of that is that extra coverage just for the individual, the board, and management, and so forth. So I believe it came up sometime earlier this year, and the cost of that came into question, and I think we were, the ultimate question was, is there an opportunity to save any money there? So we asked the broker to see if they could provide us some information regarding benchmarking and maybe the type of claims that they have seen in the past. Unfortunately, they weren't able to provide us anything in the way of claim examples. They did provide us some benchmarking data, but it was pretty, I don't know how effective it was in actually, you know, conveying any useful information to us. So I kind of looked at the quotes that we received from the insurance companies, and you can kind of tell by looking at those where they feel our loss areas are. And if you look at the tables on the back, the A table,
page three,
you can kind of see that most of the premium for our D&O, for the primary D&O, is in that first $2.5 million. So it kind of tells us that that's where the underwriters feel our primary risk is. And you can see the different premiums at different layers. But we need to keep in mind, if you do want to consider reducing that at all, there's two elements of that primary D&O insurance, and that involves the D&O coverage itself, and it includes employment practices liability. So it's actually that $10 million that we have is actually a shared limit between two separate coverages. That's for the benefit of SEPA's funding their indemnification obligations at the board. And that other, the side A coverage is really just for the benefit of the board members and management.
So if you
look at that.
Gary,
yeah.
This is Joel. Can I ask just a question? Is that all right, Mr.
Yeah, go ahead, Joel.
So the side A $2.5 million individual coverage, is that for claims if someone were to sue an individual board member for their actions taken on behalf of the organization, and that there'd be coverage under the D&O piece, and then separate coverage for each individual director in case they get sued?
Yeah, it's kind of an excess. So it would apply. Let's say we ran out of money on the primary, and for one reason or another, the indemnification couldn't be made to the board member.
Oh, okay.
This policy would kind of drop down.
Okay.
Drop down and pick up the gap.
Got it.
It would also come into play if for some reason the primary carry was defective in some regard, like maybe if there was a bankruptcy and the bankruptcy estate kind of attached that asset and it wouldn't be available to the individuals. So it's kind of a sleep insurance. It's an extra protection, some dedicated limits for the board members and management.
Okay, thank you.
When you look at this chart, items chart C on page 3, it's kind of interesting when you start playing around with, you know, looking at different primary limits and looking at how the excess limits would set on top of it. As we reduce the coverage under the primary, for example, if you go all the way down to, say, $5 million on the primary, and then go across to and see the different options for the side A, you see the side A coverage really goes up as we drop those primary limits. And in fact, if you look at the 2.5 side A column for 7.5 million and 10 million, it's really, there's no difference. Part of it has to do with you've got two different underwriters writing each of those layers, and you can see they have kind of different perceptions of risk at those different layers. So we thought there might be some opportunity here to reduce the overall premium by, you know, making some adjustments, maybe dropping the primary down to 7.5 million or so. And we've got some options for the side A, but you can see there's not a whole lot of savings opportunity there unless you drop way down to, you know, maybe like 5 million on the primary D&O and 1 million on the side A. But to me, when you get down into that range of 5 million, I think you're taking on some extra risk because we have this shared limit with the D&O coverage and the employment practice, and it doesn't leave much contingency there.
So, Gary, one thing also maybe touch on that, you know, one of the reasons why you don't see much difference also in the, as you start to slide some of these coverages a little bit down, is that the continuity credit also decreases as the primary decreases.
Yeah.
So it kind of offsets any savings you thought you might have got by sliding
exactly.
that. And for people that aren't familiar with the continuity credit is essentially we've been with them a long time and they give us a credit for that. Go ahead, Gary.
Exactly. It's kind of an enticement to renew with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't have a problem with reducing that primary. If you wanted to take it down to 7.5 million, I think it still gives quite a bit of contingency. And frankly, you know, we've looked at this over the years, and it's kind of hard to envision claims that would, you know, result in a huge loss. Although it's kind of the purpose of the coverage, because these type of claims, it's sometimes hard to comprehend what could happen. We're starting to see some of this kind of stuff in California here with these fires and so forth, where we're having claims against public utilities, some public utilities, including water districts and so forth, where they've had, you know, governmental immunities from tort-type claims, but these plaintiffs are now claiming things like inverse condemnation, which kind of bypasses those protections, and it's like, well, who would have thought of that? So it's hard to point to a claim scenario, but they're the type of things that you don't think about.
So, Gary Lisa.
I would hate to see you.
Gary Lisa has a question. Go ahead, Lisa.
My question is actually for Trey.
Okay.
Do you have a recommendation on what your preference is after having done this deep dive?
So, I would say after doing the deep dive, and if you look at the last table C down there, and if you go down into the lower right corner and kind of look in that area there, where if you lower your primary to 7.5 from 10 million,
it's actually more.
It's $2 more. You know,
and I think that has to do with, you know, you got two different underwriters with different perceptions of their risk at that layer.
And then if you say, well, let's keep it at 10 million and lower our side A from 2.5 to 1.5, I mean, it's literally only a few bucks difference. So at this point in time, I think we could make some small minor adjustments and not really get much savings out of it. If the board was interested in making a major adjustment, there would be some savings. For instance, I mean, if you did go to 7.5 and lowered your side A to 1.5, well, then we'd see $10,000 a year savings there. That would be about as far as I would go with it.
But that buys a heat pump.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's still a savings, and but it's just a matter of where the comfort level is.
From a risk perspective, is it worth saving for a heat pump every year versus what we know and are seeing in California and Washington and Oregon, that if there are forest fires, and certainly our facilities lie in the National Forest, there's an absolute risk there. You know,
not today, maybe.
But. Maybe not today, but we don't know. You know, you just don't know. So I raised the initial question because I started thinking, you know, why would you spend $10 million coverage for a board that's, you know, made up of mostly elected officials?
We had a fire very close to our transmission line on the island this year.
So
10 acres. Well,
and I just one other comment, kind of wrap up my opinion on it would be is that, you know, the board here doesn't get any benefits essentially for being on this board, and the least we can do is offer appropriate protections from them from any type of lawsuit. So, and looking at the minor savings we may get by adjusting these down, I would be inclined to leave it as is.
Well, so thank you for the information, and if there's...
I got a question.
Yes.
I just want some clarifications. Jack Davies here, Gary. Am I reading this correctly? If the underlying limit was retained at $10 million and we decided not to buy the Side A at all, would the renewal premium be $71,891?
Yes.
That's the premium for the primary director and officer / employment practice liability.
And that's backing out the continuity credit. It starts
off
at 99.
No, you still have the credit.
No,
you
start
off. The credit only applies to the...
Sorry, Gary. I think, at least the way I'm reading this, you got your rated premium, and then you have your continuity credit that gets backed out, and that leaves you with the $71,000.
But that would be you write a check for $71,000 for that credit.
Yes.
And that would be no...
That continuity credit only applies to the primary D&O. There is no continuity credit on the Side A coverage. It's
essentially, the Side A coverage is excess insurance.
Yes.
Correct. Yes, that's excess strictly for the board members and management. It does not cover the entity.
And what did the primary $10 million limit cost last year?
It was approximately the same. It's been pretty stable over the last decade, actually.
I don't have that number in front of me either, Gary, but I'm pretty sure it's...
I
thought it was 97.
It's within dollars of the same of that same figure.
But the 97,000 would have been without the continuity credit. The continuity credit was in last year too.
That's correct.
Okay.
We've been with the same insurance company since 2002. So we get this, as long as we renew with that same company, we get the credit. And it's a function of a surplus from the carrier, and they have a whole formula of how they calculate it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
Just one additional item for the good of the order. It doesn't necessarily have to be a legitimate issue that comes up like a fire or something else. It can also be a frivolous lawsuit that is brought. And
absolutely.
I'm speaking from experience right now. We are in the middle of one in the city and borough of Wrangell, and all of the assembly members and myself and a couple of the department heads were named personally in the suit. And so you just never know when someone can get a burr in there. Be in their bonnet, I guess we'll say, and decide they want to do something ridiculous. So I wholeheartedly concur with Trey's assessment.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I will point out that the preamble to this does sort of make a very strong case for a very low risk. So for directors and officers. But if there's no real savings, then I don't see why changing it would be effective. But I do dislike over-insuring for the sake of feeling that you're getting additional, because we all know that the way this works is that what you're insured for is what you're going to get sued for, because they can't get blood from the turnips. So if you're buying additionally, you know, so I think it's a good, I appreciate that it was brought forward for us to review, and I do appreciate the preamble on our actual risks. But if there's no real savings, substantial savings, I don't see why we'd go in and muck with it.
So one of the reasons why there was pointed out that we are low risk is that was one of our first questions. Are you rating the agency appropriately for our risk profile?
Right.
So that was one thing we wanted to make sure that that was the case, and indeed they confirmed that we are kind of in the lowest risk category.
Well, I guess a follow-up question to that.